So I figured out another thing. I think you guys are going to really like this.
Okay, I got something for you too, but go ahead.
Okay. So do you know, you guys, well, I know you, you know what the term virtue signaling means.
Yes. Virtue signaling?
Yeah. You know what the term virtue signaling. So I figured this out. The guys that make a point of open carry.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
They are Second Amendment virtue signalers.
Yes, they are.
That's what they are. They yes, are right-wing virtue
that,
signalers.
That and too lazy to go get their CCP.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, those guys like insist like, I don't need one. I'm open carrying. And it's like, no, you're just
a douche with
you're
a penis
being
extension.
A douche. You're just like, why are you doing this? You know, I get it if you're some old guy and that's just what you do, but like, no.
Yeah, but you better be wearing fucking buckskins with a beard grizzly. Adams, seriously.
I don't know. I've seen like old guys in overalls like strapping on a revolver and like that. That's just how they roll.
Yeah, they
like,
got one boot outside their pant leg.
Yeah, 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 yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah. You know, they smell.
I'm okay with that.
They smell like beef jerky, but like you know, unless you're like over 50 and wearing overalls and stuff, nope.
And you're going to the grain store. Yeah. You're going to the feed store.
Yeah.
There you go.
This is just the modern equivalent to, you know, whenever you hear somebody say, I'm honest. You can trust me.
Oh, yeah. Fuck off. Yeah.
Believe me.
No offense, but. Like, seriously? Guys,
don't take it personally. But.
Yeah. Fuck off with all that noise. Like, just grow some character, would you?
Yeah.
So, yes, I don't mean to offend you when I say this. However, I'm trying to do it for your own good.
You know? Hold still while I stick this conversational stick up your asshole. Yeah, I... Yes,
hey, here's your talking
people.
Stick. Oh. Wham!
And now I'm a puppet master.
I mean, it's not like I feel like it's this really pervasive problem. I mean, there was that idiot who went into the Walmart with a AR-15...
Right.
You know, said he was just doing it just to be a joker or something. But, yeah, I don't know this whole thing about doing that. It's just kind of lame. You're not accomplishing anything. And actually, like, if you're running around saying, if you're carrying a gun in any capacity, saying you're doing it for self-defense, that indicates you take your self-defense seriously and you're taking positive steps to do it. But if you're open carrying, it defeats that whole thing because you've lost all tactical advantage in open carrying.
Yep.
Yes.
So you don't take your defense seriously. You're just being
a
joker.
Not in the slightest. They know that you're armed. They're going to pick you off from afar.
Yeah.
Like, it's like just run around with a fucking Target shirt.
Yeah.
And your goddamn AR-15 over your shoulder or whatever. I don't get it.
Yeah, and how many people that are...
Neither do they.
Concealed carrying are now aware and afraid of that guy.
Well, and they're more on point.
Uh-huh.
That guy is just wandering around... And, you know, mindlessly wandering through life, and the people around them are super on point and watching you, and they're aware, and, your advantage is gone.
Including the police.
Oh, especially the police.
Yeah.
Especially, like, that guy's a fucking problem walking down the street. Like, just, he's got the name problem on him.
Yeah.
And it's...
So maybe I should stop and talk to him and see what's going on, because maybe he's having a really bad day.
But they won't do that, because they're always white dudes that do this.
Yeah.
I don't fucking get it.
Well, I don't know. There's actually a video on YouTube of a Corvallis police officer, of all things, stopping a pair that were doing this a couple of years ago.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And the way this officer...
Nothing ever happens at Corvallis.
It's really weird.
A guy was doing it downtown, got stopped and talked to by police. He was open carrying an AR.
So I was thinking, like...
Kim got phoned in.
Really?
Yeah. She, like, I don't know, needed to do something, like... I don't know. She needed to, like, fix the magazine release on her AK-47, something like that. I don't know. And so she needed to, like...
You always got to fix that on an AK-47.
She's got to
rattly
drill something out, whatever it was. It was, like, a quick fix type of thing. So she comes over and uses my drill press, fixes this thing. Okay. Then she's got to go back home. And she drove in with it in her car and was going to fix it and all this kind of thing. And then a few days later, it was time to go home with it. It got a fix, and she's only got her bike. So she said, well, screw it. I'll just throw it over my shoulder and ride back on my bike.
That's what you need, a Mohawked lesbian riding down the street on a Harley with an AK-47 over her shoulder.
Yeah.
That's kind of awesome.
So she got phoned into the police.
Two men enter, one man leave.
Two men enter, no men leave.
Right.
And then the police actually showed up at her doorstep. And we're like, hey, was this going on? And she's like, yep. And they were like, why were you doing that? And she told him, like, well, I need to.
Because I don't have a mill at my house.
Yeah, and so she needed to fix her gun. And they're like, okay. And she's just like, is that even really illegal? And they were like, no. And we told the person it wasn't illegal. We just thought we'd check and see. And obviously there's nothing to see. And so that, but I thought that was actually a reasonable excuse for it. You know,
that's an absolutely reasonable excuse for it.
This is just.
But, putting it in a case and strapping the case to your back would probably be a little more.
Then they just think you're selling pipes.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, ladies and gentlemen, we are Ruined Heroes, a weekly, free, and self-produced podcast wherein the three of us irreverently discuss a topic of societal renown. I, Tyler, study like a speed-fueled son of a preacher. John.
Well, I'm just lucky I don't have any moles.
And Rupert.
I'm just here.
That's pretty lackluster.
Yeah, it's kind of a turn-down day.
Yeah. Well, it started drizzling. You didn't get to ride your bike, which is good because you got to take all those shipping labels home.
Yeah. So it's better than actually rolling around with an AK on your back. Now you can just, you could have done it with shipping labels.
Yeah, UPS shipping labels. That's a reason to pull you over. So they give that shit away for free, oddly enough. So please subscribe and leave good ratings and reviews on whatever podcast feed you get us through. To interact with us, we are ruinedheroespod@gmail.com, as well as easily found on Facebook and Twitter, where you get weekly hints and occasionally another thing or two. To donate toward the cost of the show, you can go to patreon.com/ruinedheroes and start getting extra content for just $1 a month. I do want to thank those of you that already do. There are links to that and some other stuff in the notes, like our website and that kind of shit.
Cool.
There is also something that's happened. It's now a couple weeks ago, but I'm going to have to start citing my sources a little bit more because there's a plagiarism and podcasting thing going on. So there will be a little bit more additional stuff here after a moment.
Somebody accused us of plagiarism?
No. It was a big deal. It was a relatively large podcast got accused of plagiarism. And so everybody just now has to cite their sources.
Wow.
What?
It's blanket plagiarism because we all have the same resources now. And so we all draw our information from the same places.
You don't have to cite your sources. There's no law.
I do. So, just to make life easier. So, intro.
Ain't no law.
Son, don't do coke. Do speed. It's much better for you.
Sonny Barger, no. Head of the Hells Angels.
You're very close. You're really not too far. The topic was one of two places, at the Rainbow or on tour.
Lemmy Kilmister.
Nicely done. Go. Yes, sir. So sources, much of this information was from Jenny, GENI.com, and 2010 documentary called Lemmy. And there was a documentary that autoplayed on YouTube while I was making dinner, so I don't know the name of it, but I listened to it while I was making dinner. So I'm sorry I can't cite that one, but whatever. It is what it is. Factoids. So, born Ian Fraser Kilmister, December 24th, 1945. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Christmas Eve.
Yeah, right?
Fraser.
Right? Ian Fraser. And you wonder why he went by Lemmy. Well, we'll find out why he went by Lemmy.
He went by Lemmy for a completely different reason.
We'll find out why he went by Lemmy, but something other than Ian Fraser would be nice.
Fraser? It's just like,
I know.
Baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salad and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
His parents were Sidney Davy Albert Kilmister and Jessie Milda Willis. He was born in Stoke-on-Trent, Staffordshire. Dad was an ex-Royal Air Force preacher who, soon after his birth, disappeared from or separated from his mother. He supposedly has two half-brothers.
Wow, the preacher ran out on the wife?
I know.
Ooh.
Scandalous. In 1945.
Wow, that's like...
That's...
What does that say about his mother?
Yeah, there's
How crazy does she have to be for a priest to leave?
I think the priest is the crazy one, frankly.
Yeah.
Like, you believe in invisible beings in the sky. No offense to anybody who does, but seriously?
That's like, wow. Hmm.
1945. Ex-Royal Air Force preacher at that, too.
Oh, please.
Oh, my God.
Oh, please. That's like kind of a walk-on job. I mean... What are you really doing there?
Avoiding the front lines.
I guess so. I mean, that's like, I mean, what the hell? That's not a job.
Yeah.
That isn't.
Not really.
That's like being chief encourager at a pizza parlor.
Yeah, but dude, every unit has a chaplain. You know, that's the way that is.
Gotta keep these guys busy.
There's more than... They now have
multiple. Have a lot of representation now, but it used to be just a chaplain.
Jesus
yeah,
Christ. The Air Force and mom.
So he and his mother moved in with the grandmother and to a few small towns nearby. They moved around a little bit, but by age 10, his mom married George Willis, who was a former athlete. He and Ian did not get along at all. Soon the family moved to Benlich, Wales. I'm probably going to fuck up some of this even though it's English. And it is said that he earned the nickname Lemmy. Story goes, and even Lemmy seems incapable of confirming it, but that he started getting called Lemmy as a shortened version of "Let me have a quid for the slots."
Yeah. Lemmy a quid.
And he's 10. So he's 10, and he's throwing quid into the slot machines.
Well, he developed this love of gambling early on, and it stayed around the entire time.
He developed a lot of things early on, and they stayed.
Well, what, the half gallon of Jack Daniels a day?
Starting at age 30 and continuing for a
while. I have a hard time believing it was a half gallon. But, you know, a fifth is really quite doable.
Yeah, I can polish off a fifth in a day if I'm, you know, pace myself.
And do it every day? You know,
no.
Just a big...
No. You notice there's no fifth of liquor here today.
Right.
I might have visited a fifth yesterday.
Well, they cover that in a documentary.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, that like he actually did really do that.
Yeah, the documentary is actually quite good.
Yeah, it's a good documentary. It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
Weird guy. Rent-controlled apartment in Hollywood.
In Hollywood, just blocks from the rainbow.
Yeah.
With his son living there.
Yeah
we'll get into that. So it is also during this time that the legend says he saw another boy at school playing guitar with a circle of girls around him. So in classic teenager fashion, I'm getting to get me a guitar
and get me some
girls. Right. So Lemmy went home, got his mother's guitar, and took it to school. He claims he got a group of girls too, even though he had absolutely no fucking idea how to play the thing.
That's not surprising.
Right.
Because they like the artistic types.
Yeah, hey,
the artistic bad boy.
I worked that angle. Well, I still work that angle.
How's that working out for you?
I'm not trying very hard right now, so about as much effort as I'm putting in is about as much as I'm getting out. Right now.
That says a lot about life, though.
It's like
really
a retirement
does.
Plan. I'm putting fuck all in. I'm getting fuck all out of it.
Yeah. half those guys walking around with a guitar couldn't play it to save their lives.
True. Like I got like 8 chords under my belt at tops.
Yeah, I could play the beginning of Pinball Wizard.
I can play the intro to Stairway to Heaven really shittily.
I can pick it up and go strum.
Yes.
I could play the intro to Roundabout.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, back to the chicks.
By 16, he had a chance to see the Beatles and learn to play along with some of their songs. This led him to play with local bands while working crap jobs during his later teens.
Well, to be fair, it's not like the Beatles were guitar... virtuosos.
They had two guitar... Well, okay, true. Okay. But they had two guitar players.
They did, but they weren't virtuosos. They really... you didn't have to be overly talented to match up with the Beatles.
No, you didn't have to be any virtuoso, but, I mean, George was a quite competent guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was very competent. I mean...
And John wasn't great at the guitar, but John was mainly a lyricist anyhow, and so was Paul. I mean, John and Paul have more hits than any other writing duo ever.
Who's bad?
Beatles.
Who's bad?
Good call. At 17, he made it. That's a deep cut. Y'all are gonna have to Google that shit. At 17, he made it. Met a young lady named Kathy, who he followed back to England and eventually had a son with. So he's 17, already having a kid again.
Followed back to England.
Yeah, well, he was living in Wales. Remember?
Oh, we're counting that as a different place.
They do.
I don't know why.
Well, you count Washington as a different place than Oregon, and frankly, we count
Northern California
as a different place than Southern California, and it's one state.
If I'm in Oregon and I move to Nevada, I'm not going back to the United States. I mean, what the hell is that?
If you're in Oregon and you move to Texas, you might be.
Well, even Eastern Oregon.
Yeah.
I'm coming back from that place.
Very different place.
I don't know. The only guy I know ever, like, really made... big deal about that was Tom Jones. He was like, I'm a Welshman. And it's like, oh, shut the fuck up. Just shut up. It's all the same thing.
Tom Jones, you're a Vegasite. Seriously, get over it.
Let's face it. If you're dividing up an island into different countries, I mean, Dominican Republic and Haiti, I mean...
The only person that's more of a Vegasite than Tom Jones would
Let's
probably
draw a line
be Wade Newton.
Wait, say again?
More of a Vegasite than Tom Jones would be Wayne Newton. Or Wayne...
All right, this is going on.
I don't know. David Copperfield? Anyway.
Strained joking.
So, yeah, it is.
It is believed that the son was named Sean, but he was put up for adoption. Lemmy's first bands were influenced by the likes of Little Richard, Elvis, and a few other people.
All right, everybody else. Everybody
else. That's who everybody was listening to at the time. Yeah. Rock and roll was new. In fact, Lemmy once said, I remember when there wasn't rock and roll. And he's right. I mean, like, if you were born in 1945, you do remember when there was not actually rock and roll.
No, it was just like big band.
Yeah.
Glenn Miller.
Jazz.
Yeah. I don't know.
It wasn't even smooth.
I don't even know there was even jazz back
there was totally
then.
Jazz
I think
back
it was
then.
Like Glenn Miller. It
there was
like,
jazz back then.
Like?
Charlie Parker. 60s? I guess that's 60s. I'm 20 years too
old. Yeah.
Like
what? What jazz records were really making it over there then?
I don't know.
I mean, Chet Baker and
but
stuff
was
like
it was,
50s.
It was, the beats were around in the 50s, so there had to
here,
be some kind of jazz.
Here, I don't think they had them there. Maybe I'm totally off
Expats
base with this.
Expats in Paris was big about the beat generation.
Fuck those people go to Paris.
There had to be
Fuck
jazz.
Those. I don't think so. I think
know.
It was Big Bang Glenn
You were
Miller
closer
bullshit.
Alive than I was, although not actually alive. But.
Wow, talk about a deep cut. Those deep cuts just keep coming, don't they?
That was razor sharp.
Who's bad?
So anyhow, with that inspiration, it would make sense that one of his first bands was called the Motown Sect, S-E-C-T, which I think is funny.
The Motown Sect.
Yeah, as in cultish, yeah.
A bunch of Welshmen.
A bunch of white Welshmen.
Yeah.
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 I'm not in charge.
Why don't they just call themselves the Incongruities, you know what I mean?
The Oxymorons.
Yeah.
I love it. Nicely done. Either way, they hung together for about 3 years playing in clubs, but eventually dissolved, as bands do when you're, you know, late teens, early 20s.
I'm trying to picture, like, Lemmy doing some sort of Four Tops, like, synchronized dance moves with the rest
right?
of his buds up on stage. I don't really see it.
Right?
Yeah. Doesn't really...
But, you know, like a suit and tie, maybe. It's still hard to see Lemmy doing that, but...
Yeah. But, like, doing some, like, heel twirls or something? No, I can't see that happening. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would love to see some kind of video of that, but I don't think that it exists anywhere.
I don't think there was video then, either. Yeah.
Maybe he was just being, like, Davy Jones and the Monkees and shaking the maracas.
I think that
maybe
might be
that's what was
something
going on.
Like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Davy Jones. It's a crazy name. Anyway, so in 1965, he was in a band called the Rocking Vickers, which is a possible nod to his father's profession.
The Rocking Vickers.
Yeah.
All right, so band naming was not a strong suit here.
Yes.
Yeah. This is some of the shittiest band names ever.
Well, either way, shitty band name or not, the Rocking Vickers signed with CBS for 3 singles and toured throughout Europe.
And that's why you've never heard of them.
Because they stayed in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is said that they were the first British band to visit the Socialist Federal Republic of Yugoslavia. Which I don't know if that's...
Wow, that's a real, like,
yeah,
oh my God.
There's a plaque, I'm sure. And
nobody else is going to end up allowing you to play. You've got to go find somewhere behind the curtain.
Yeah. Yeah. First band to tour Yugoslavia. Like, what the hell is that?
That's the whole, okay, well, I'm this, you know, second place. No, I'm the first loser, okay?
Yeah, that's just like, what the hell is that?
We're that's top of the bottom six.
Yeah. Yeah, that isn't the top of the Christmas list. That's the bottom of the shit list.
That's how you build a bracket for losers, yeah.
Yeah, there is no buy on that round.
The band eventually moved to Manchester. We're like all fucking British.
So they
bands.
Moved back to England.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because he was out of his parents' house. He didn't have to live in Wales on a fucking island anymore.
Yeah, because Manchester's like central north.
It's Manchester. It's where all the bands go.
Yeah. Steel Town.
Yeah. So this is where he met Tracy. Although they didn't marry, Tracy bore Lemmy a son named Paul. I'm really hoping it wasn't after Paul and the Beatles, but I couldn't find out.
Well, did they hang on to that one at least?
Yes. All right,
that's
because
good.
Lemmy was so into his music and didn't think much about his relationship with Tracy. Basically, he was like, that was a one-night stand. She was like, I love him. And he was like, I don't know. He didn't spend much of any time with Paul until Paul was six. I don't know why at six he turned around, but whatever. People have enlightening
moments. Well, maybe the Yugoslavia tour didn't pay what he thought it would.
I'm sure it was an economically sound part of the world.
Yeah. Paying you in that, you know, Ruski money.
Well, yeah, the Socialist Federal Republic.
Yeah.
Not making money there.
Yeah, I always thought it was funny.
Bourgeois fuckers.
Like the guy running that was named Tito. It's like one of the Jackson Five is running a communist country.
Yeah. That's some darn fine vodka. Yeah. You know, I'll take it. 1967, Lemmy moves in with Noel Redding, which is a Facebook.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Bass player for the Jimi Hendrix Experience. Yep. Great bass player.
Yes, excellent bass player. And also Neville Chesters, which was Hendrix's manager at the time.
God, he had these. Hendrix,
how do you fall into that?
Hendrix had these like swish name guys all around him, like Noel Redding. Well, Mitch Mitchell. I mean, what kind of name was that? But like, yeah, Mitch Mitchell was one of the greatest drummers that ever lived.
Mitch Mitchell's a tough name.
Yeah, is it? Is it? I don't know.
I bet if we did research on him, we'd find out his first name was not actually Mitch.
Yeah,
like it was shortened Mitchell. And he became Mitch Mitchell.
I thought, like, Mitch Mitchell was... Mitch Mitchell really, like, got the short end of the stick because, like, he was just... I think he was, like, better in that band than
John Graham Mitchell.
Was.
What's that?
John Graham Mitchell.
Yeah, see?
There you go.
Told you.
There you go. But, like, I mean, he made that band. Like, I mean, if you listen to Fire, like, you know...
Yeah, I mean...
Just great drumming. You wouldn't have had shit without him.
Much like Alex Van Halen, set behind a phenomenal guitar player, so he disappears a little bit.
Alex Van Halen was no great drummer.
Alex is a stunning drummer.
He's a good drummer, but he wasn't like... See, Mitch, you don't get Keith Moon without Mitch Mitchell.
I don't particularly
Mitch Mitchell was the first guy to drum like Keith Moon. He drummed like Keith Moon before Keith Moon did, where, like, the entire song was a drum break. And he wasn't just doing, like, backbeats bullshit, you know?
Wasn't Mitch jazz trained, though?
Oh, please. Don't go there. Don't go there. Stop it. Stop it. Sit down.
So, either way, living with Noel Redding and Neville Chesters, he landed a gig, or a short-term gig, as a roadie for Hendrix, which might be where he started getting some more influences on his music. Not quite yet, actually, almost. 1968, he joins the psychedelic band Sam Gopal, G-O-P-A-L, and recorded one album with them.
Again, with these great band names.
Yeah.
That one really rolls off the tongue.
Sam Gopal? Like, I had to double check the spell check. It didn't, yeah. That's like
Norman Greenbaum. Like, you know, what the fuck is that? Got one of the most famous songs ever, Spirits in the Sky, but yet nobody can... Norman Greenbaum sung
nobody
that?
Knows.
No, nope. You know, if he had just picked differently.
Although the guy's killing it off of royalties.
Probably.
1969.
Him and Gary Glitter. They're kind of the same. They're like this weird ballpark music.
Ladies and gentlemen,
music.
Open your browser window and just start Googling some of this shit, because I'm not going to... Not going to spend too much time.
I like these one-hit wonders where it's like, they somehow are like iconic songs, even though nobody can tell you why.
Or by who?
Go to any sporting event. And
yeah, you're going to hear Gary Glitter.
Yeah.
That's what I love it. Everybody cheering.
That and Jock Jams.
Yeah. Everybody cheering along for this like big, huge gay guy that turned out to be a pedophile.
Yeah.
Surprise! It's more than that.
Well, you know, it's common in the music industry. I mean, anyway, so...
Who's bad? It just keeps coming up.
It's coming.
It just keeps giving and giving and giving and giving.
Michael Jackson, he's just like a perversion pinata, you know? He just pops out everything.
You just keep beating it. Just keep falling right down.
Stuff will fall out.
We've got to cover that atrocity at some point in time. So, 1969, Lemmy and Simon King, later of Hawkwind, will get their form a band. Okay, names are getting a little bit better, but it might be a little bit of an off-take, called Opal Butterfly.
Yeah.
A little better.
I had to read that too.
A little better.
Iron Butterfly, did they misspell something?
Yeah.
Was he like a breeze, a flash in the pan with Iron Butterfly?
I don't know.
Opal. Nope,
they actually could sing in the Garden of Eden, maybe. I don't know. Who knows?
Opal Butterfly.
Opal Butterfly.
Jesus.
Yeah. It's my next gay pride parade float.
I know. I feel like I knew a black drag queen named Opal Butterfly at one point in my life.
Yeah, that's got to be that's straight in San Francisco, yeah.
That's straight up, you know, 6'3" black drag queen. That's her.
There you go.
Yeah.
I love it. Giant headdress.
Yeah.
I'm into it now.
Yeah.
Get on it, RuPaul.
Yeah.
The band was a flop, probably because they had a terrible name.
Everybody thought they were going to a drag show, and it's some idiot playing guitar.
So anyway, after Opal Butterfly failed, 1971, Lemmy had been a rhythm guitar player all this time. I remember he was still playing guitar. But Hawkwind, with his earlier bandmate and new pal Dick Mick, D-I-K-M-I-K.
Okay, that's a good band
name. That's a dude. That's a dude.
I don't care what the fuck it is.
It's
a better band name than Norman Greenbaum.
It is. Anyhow, they found themselves without a... Hawkwind found themselves without a bass player after a few shows, because the guy was a slacker bass player, and the guy left his bass rig in the band van. They gave the rig, including the bass, which was not a Rickenbacker of note, but it will be coming up, to Lemmy, and his new style was born. A moment on his style is... I don't know if you've ever heard Lemmy or not, but he doesn't pluck bass, or he strums bass. It was a very unique style at the time. He still played it like a rhythm guitar player. It was an interesting noise at the time, and backed up the Hawkwind sound pretty well. And he kept that style forever.
Yeah.
I mean, he molded it a bit, but he did kind of keep that style forever. And he is of note. He is kind of the forefront of that one.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because that's such a heavy metal sound. To do that.
Now it is.
You know?
It was pretty unheard of then.
I mean, the closest... So if you're trying to think about what that sound is, the sound difference between that is like a plucked bass is like the bass you hear in the Who's My Generation.
Okay.
That's a good example. But a strummed bass is kind of the sound that you hear...
in every Motorhead tune.
At the start of Jimi Hendrix's Voodoo Child.
Okay, I can see it.
I'm trying to think of very common songs everybody would know. And that's the sound difference. So to go to that sound is like a pretty huge break because like the plucked bass sound is...
That's understandable.
It's understandable, relatable. It's easy to generate because you're just playing the root note of the chord that the rhythm guitar player is playing,
right.
And you're
or
just reinforcing the guitar, you know? Mm-hmm. But to do the strum bass, like, it's a real departure. I don't think, maybe I'm totally wrong here, but I don't think you could ever do a strum electric bass sound and not get heavy metal. I can't think of a non-heavy metal song that uses it.
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think you're just instantly there.
It's got to happen.
It must. Maybe
I've seen a guy strum a fucking piano. So
yeah, and if you watch the Partridge Family, Danny Partridge is always strumming the bass. I don't think he's actually playing it.
So, either way, that's how I became a bass player. Mm-hmm. And by this time, he had also become a frequent user of many drugs, but speed was always his favorite. Now, mind you, this is not meth. This is amphetamines.
Yeah.
There is a difference. So, and that difference stayed true. Like, he did amphetamines, not meth, which is why he died with most of his teeth and shit like that. Mm-hmm. And maybe why he was able to manage it, because it doesn't turn you into a fucking insane, psychopathic, murderous... masturbatory, whatever. You just.
But also anyway, in this,
people would just masturbate more and try to rip their dicks off when they did it. That we get rid of some of these people.
I mean, in this time, prescription speed pills. We were coming off of World War II, where speed had been invented, And then in this time, speed was a much more popular drug in England than it was Casey in the United States.
Well, I mean, it was coming to the States heavily. I mean, look at Casey at the Wheel, the driver for the Dead, and prior to that, part of the Beat Generation.
Right, but speed was really, it was not a social drug. It was looked down upon here. It was like a big, it had big negative connotations here. In that time.
It was also still just diet pills. I mean, crosstops were just fucking diet pills.
No, but you had, like, Grace Slick doing advertisements saying speed kills and all that kind of crap here. You know, you didn't have that in England. You know, in England, it was an accepted social drug to do.
Okay. I'll believe you.
Well, if you watch...
Speed has always kind of had a thing about it, though.
If you watch Quadrophenia, that's all they're doing in it. They're constantly doing prescription speed. And, like, crazy amounts.
Yeah. Like, well, prescription speed, it's easier to do crazy.
Yeah, right, amounts. Exactly. But I'm thinking that they had all this prescription speed coming off of World War II, and now these guys that are making it got to dump it somewhere, so everybody's doing it at rock shows. Assholes.
He was also pretty heavy into psychedelics, because if you don't know, Hawkwind was a pretty psychedelic band. There was a significant bond built between Lemmy and Dick Mick over this issue. Like, they loved doing speed together. Apparently, until Dick Mick ran out of money. And then they didn't get on so well anymore. But whatever that is.
Well, yeah, because there's no more Lemmy a quid.
Yeah, Lemmy a quid for some more speed.
Yeah.
So, the band was relatively well known now, and was relatively well known then. Lemmy contributed his unique sound both on vocals and bass for a number of years, and even sang on Silver Machine, which is probably the band's biggest hit, reaching number 3 on the British charts. It's a pretty good song if y'all want to look it up and haven't heard it. By 1975, Lemmy's affinity for speed had been a growing issue in Hawkwind. You know, like, because if you're up all night and don't get up to make the fucking bus in the morning and stuff, it's a problem amongst the band members. And while coming back into America from Canada, Lemmy was busted for possession. Some say that he was charged with possession of cocaine, and that since testing proved it wasn't, he was released. But either way, 5 days in jail, he was released, no charges, but he lost his place in the band.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he probably just had some crushed up amphetamine pills, and they arrested him for coke and tested it and said, well, it's not coke. Have a nice day! Back to America with you, where you fucking speed freaks belong, I guess. I don't know.
No, we don't want you. We don't want you in Canada. Eh?
Yay! Lemmy set out to make his own thing because he'd been tossed out of the band and he didn't really know how to do anything other than be a musician. He rounded up Larry Wallace, formerly of the band UFO, which is, it's amazing how many times UFO has come up in some of our older rock and roll
bands. I don't really get that, because, like, UFO, like, is this band that, like, everything comes from, but, like, nobody ever listened to.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who was like, I'm into UFO. No.
Some of the people on my Record Geek groups listen to them, but... And
yeah,
I,
but that's
I
where you have to get to. You never hear anybody, like, just, oh, man, this is a great UFO song on the radio. No.
Hell, I don't even know if one's ever been played on the radio.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Maybe back then, but you're not going to hear it on your classic rock station.
Right?
No.
You know, you're not going to hear Appetite for Destruction followed by fucking UFO. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, you're only going to hear Appetite for Destruction anymore in, you know, an elevator.
Oh, I know. That's so disheartening. Welcome to the jungle in elevator style. So anyhow, he rounded up Larry Wallace and drummer Lucas Fox to form a band they called Bastard.
Names are starting to get a little
bit
better.
Okay, that's a better name.
Well, realizing upon the good advice of their manager that the name would prevent them from going fucking anywhere, they changed the band name to Motorhead with Umlauts. Because, again, Umlauts got to come up, right?
Umlauts are awesome. Yeah. I mean, what would Motley Crue have been like without Umlauts, you know?
Right?
Were they the first Umlaut band?
I don't know.
I've always thought of them as the
very
first
close,
Umlaut
yeah.
band.
Yeah.
Well, that's...
I mean, short of things that actually came from Germany, maybe. I don't know, but yeah.
No, I mean, like, the first Umlaut band where... I think to be the first Umlaut band, you have to be non-German, and it has to be non-pronounced.
Yeah, it has to be improperly used.
Like, nobody says Blue Oyster Cult. You know?
That's right.
Yeah. True. Very true. And nobody says Mutterhead.
No. I mean, they do say it in Germany. Like, do German people say Blue Oyster Cult? I mean, this is like the whole, like, ZZ top thing in England.
Yeah, right? You know? Or the letter H.
Yeah.
So, anyhow, this is when Motorhead came around. Now the name. In Britain, Motorhead means a speed freak. It was a slang term. And this is quite probably why they grabbed it, especially since it was the last song that Lemmy had written for Hawkwind. Here's a little bit of the lyric really quickly. Sunrise, wrong side of another day, sky high and 6,000 miles away. Don't know how long I've been awake, wound up in an amazing state, can't get enough, and you know it's righteous stuff. Goes up like prices at Christmas. Motorhead. You can call me Motorhead. All right! So, clearly written about being a speed freak. So, like I said, probably why they grabbed the name. Nobody ever confirmed it, including Lemmy. The band would only have one solid member, and that was Lemmy.
Nobody else could deal with this speed freakiness.
Not for any length of time until 1995, but we'll get there. We're a long way from 1995 at this point in time. He brought a punk rock, like, fuck you, kind of, that metalheads and punks could agree upon. In fact, if you go to a party now with metalheads and punks and put on a Motorhead album, everybody gets along.
Yeah.
That was the weird...
Back then, you know, over there, the punk and the metalhead... Sex, the cliques, they did not get along, and he ended up bridging a gap between them.
Yeah.
He was out seen and, you know, seen with Sid Vicious and whatnot.
That was kind of like everywhere. Like if you were in New York, and you put on a Zeppelin album at a punk oriented party or club,
a riot would ensue.
It would turn into a thing. I think that you could probably say that punks hated metal more than disco,
and more than the mods. Yeah,
but punks like always gravitated towards Motorhead. Motorhead was totally acceptable. You could put on like Ace of Spades, the Ace of Spades, which was like to me it was like anything on a Zeppelin album, but somehow that was okay.
Yep, and everybody got along on that. So
yeah,
it is an interesting bridge gapper. And, you know, kind of props to them for that, because that's hard to accomplish, to bring two so divergent groups together and all right, everybody's getting out of control, put on the Motorhead album, and oddly enough, people are no longer out of control.
Everybody's buying each other a beer.
Well, I think it was,
you know,
actually...
They're taking turns giving each other hand jobs. You know?
I think it was actually accidental, because, like, you know, the Motorhead used a lot of the subset of punk imagery that was like punk horror rock, okay?
Yeah.
And they used a lot of that imagery, so that helped them quite a bit. You know, sitting there with a Rickenbacker, it was a little bit, you know, horror rock looking. You know, at the time that Motorhead started getting big with the punk crowd was sort of the same time that a lot of horror rock bands, which were essentially metal, start getting big, like the Misfits.
Yes.
You know, Misfits are essentially a metal band.
They are. But it's representative of the punk
culture.
But
they're considered punk. They're not considered Zeppelin, you know.
So are Suicidal Tendencies. Technically a metal band, but considered part of the punk scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah.
But Suicidal Tendencies did not use any of the metal imagery.
No, they didn't. They looked like they were from South Central L.A., which is where they were fucking from.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, like, the Misfits...
Yeah, the skateboarders picked up on them.
Loved that
oh,
shit,
my
yeah.
God.
Yeah, I mean, they were a California thing, but, like, you know, the Misfits were, like... Horror rock, it's very hard to be horror rock and non-metal. I don't think there is such a thing. But, you know, that's what Motorhead was lumped in with, is sort of, like, the whole horror rock... You know, speed metal.
Yeah, you're
thing.
Right. I'm trying to think of one. I mean, I guess maybe Marilyn Manson may be horror rock without metal, going more industrial. He's not really
maybe,
metal. But I'm stretching, just trying to find something.
It's a little bit of a stretch, like.
Yeah, cause, I mean, you got your King Diamonds, and you got stuff like that. And there's no way in hell it's anything other than metal.
I mean, you can take some goth stuff And you can say that, like, Bauhaus, Bela Lugosi is horror rock. But
without being metal.
Actually,
listen to that album last night.
Actually, Bauhaus, Bela Lugosi is sort of a singular song of them and not representative of their work because the rest of their work does not sound like that.
No, it doesn't. But Telegram Sam is still kind of terrifying. I mean, there's still some fear.
Kicking the eyes.
Yeah.
But
it's definitely not metal.
They're just more gothy, like non-metal. Like, just
more depressed people from England.
They're kind of more, I don't know, Smiths or something. Oh.
Don't. I know.
I'm not going to.
They are kind of the same genre. Just don't fucking dirty the water with the Smiths again. Please.
It's one of those things. If you see a Bauhaus up on the shelf, you're going to probably find a Smiths under
you've
the bed.
You've got one. You've got girlfriend in a coma on a 45 or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God.
Again, here's your Google search, folks. So anyway.
Terror Cup. Okay. No. Which is the best Bauhaus song?
Terror Cup will kill Carnal, really?
I love that song because, first of all,
it's a great song. But I don't know if it's the best Bauhaus tune.
I love it because it's based on a real event.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll be damned.
Yeah, no, it's based on a real event that, like, kind of rocked the world.
Huh.
Yeah, it was like this weird.
Kind of like the Boomtown Rats and Tell Me Why I Don't Like Mondays is based on a real event that rocked the world. First school shooting ever, thanks, folks.
Yeah. But, like, Terror Cop Will Kill Colonel was based upon, like, this weird assassination that happened where everybody was like, what the fuck?
Was Terror Cop a group or something?
No, it was sort of like there were a bunch of weird Soviet assassinations that happened, and it was sort of, there was one of them that fell in there, but they all fell, there was this one where this guy was, like, walking across a bridge and he drops dead. When they do the autopsy, they find out he's got this teeny, teeny, teeny little pellet lodged in his leg with two holes that nobody could figure out how they drilled them that contained poison. And the Russians had, like, just off this guy.
This is some fucking Symbionese army kind of shit.
No. Like, everybody's like, we don't even know how you make a ball that small. Then, have you ever tried drilling a hole in a ball? It's really hard.
Drill a hole in a BB.
Drill two holes in a BB. It's even harder. Drill it in a teeny microscopic BB. That shit's fucking Russia. Can't get a man to the moon, but they, and so, I don't know, there was some sort of like fucking.
Killing dogs and rockets.
Yeah. There's some sort of fucking umbrella gun where they shot this guy's leg with this goddamn BB and he dropped dead right there. Jesus, that was a bit of a light diversion off the road there.
Yeah, that's okay. We're right back. Lemmy was the main lyricist throughout all the years of Motorhead, and Lemmy referred to him as the man who created modern speed or thrash metal, and all that has come of that. And quite frankly,
I think
probably,
that's true.
I think it's true.
I think that's true.
There's a reason that his fans refer to him as God.
Yeah.
Credit. He did something that had not been seen before, really. By 1980, the band was a sensation. They had garnered a following from previous fans of the members' work, so all the different members, which, by the way, were soon after forming. Which, by the way, soon after forming, he replaced the original members, Dick Mick or whatever his name was, and the other guy, for the first time, because it happened obviously lots, to feature Lemmy on bass and vocals, Fast Eddie Clark on guitars, and Filthy Animal Taylor on drums. Now, Filthy Animal on a drummer, that's a great fucking drummer's nickname, I gotta say.
It's like the Muppets.
It is.
That's exactly where I was going with it.
It is.
That's all I can see is beat the drums, beat the drums.
I think there was a lot of beat the drums, do the speed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But either way, Filthy Animal, P-H-I-L-T-H-Y, by the way. Filthy, great. Fucking love that one.
Well, this is like the whole persona.
Yeah.
You know, with, like, Keith Moon and John Bonham.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole thing.
Both heavy foot guys. 1980, Lemmy and Motorhead released what you most likely know them for, the Ace of Spades.
The Ace of Spades. They're one.
That is 2 minutes and 50 seconds that everybody on the face of this earth knows.
Yeah.
Yep. Everybody's heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's kind of an incredible song. It really was something that...
I don't even know why it's a great song.
Right?
I think it's just dirty, and it's about nothing but gambling on speed. Like, that's what the song is fucking about. And I think that made you, like, people can attach to that somehow. It's freeing. Not to mention, again, we've got the metalheads and the punks both screaming Ace of Spades at the same party.
Yeah, but you could probably do it at a bonfire in the middle of Georgia in the backwoods.
Oh, you could definitely do it there right after Skynyrd. Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. It just everybody knows it. Nobody can tell you why it's great, but they love it.
Well, I think it also wasn't that the album with the Harley knucklehead motor on the cover.
I can't remember.
I would believe so.
It's on my soon-to-buy record list, actually. I had forgotten that I had a gap in my collection.
I don't know. Some part of me now wants to do, like, a folk rock version of the Ace of Spades.
Oh, sort
of like
the banjo.
Like the Wii 5 does Ace of Spades.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
Me first in the Gimme Gimmes, maybe? So it is, as I mentioned, about gambling. And as we noted earlier, Lemmy quid to throw in the slots. He'd always play in the slots. And, in fact, during the documentary, Lemmy, you can see him playing two, perhaps more, machines at one time, which not uncommon for people who are really mad about slots, but watching Lemmy do it is kind of cool. Ace of Spades was also their introduction into the American market, and this made them a global sensation. People were looking for something outside of the radio pop, and Motorhead absolutely
delivered.
Yeah, that was the thing. It was like one of those bands where it's like they weren't played on the radio, so if you were into them, it was cool.
You were cool.
It was like nobody knew it was about them.
Did you get that latest Motorhead album?
Yeah, they're so scary.
My mom hates it.
Yeah. It got Harley engines on the cover. So it was so weird because it was like the 80s and all of a sudden it was the 70s again.
Right.
I still don't know how he managed to shave successfully around those moles.
I think that's part of the reason the lamb chops were there.
Yeah.
Or mutton chops were there is because, but wow.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
There's something.
It was gross. It was like Cocoa Puffs face.
It was something. So by the mid-80s, their popularity had grown to the level of performing on The Young Ones. You remember that show? As well as starting to show up in a few soundtracks. They were essentially viral, with the exception of never really making it to the radio. Along came the 90s, and Lemmy started working more and more with other artists. Of note, he worked with Ozzy on the No More Tears album, including writing credits on Mama, I'm Coming Home. He is noted to say that he probably made more money off the royalties of that song than his entire Motorhead career.
Yeah, the quote that I've got off of it was when Sharon Osbourne approached him and asked if he wanted to write four songs for Ozzy, and they handed me this lump sum that was more money than I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
More money than I'd ever earned with Hawkwind and Motorhead.
Right.
Like, wow.
I mean, and that's a great album. That is, the No More Tears album is a great album.
Oh, yeah.
But until I did this research, I had no fucking clue. I mean, he was responsible for almost half the songs on that album.
The ones that really really made it for him. And then he later on actually covered, well, I don't know if he covered, he did Hellraiser as part of Motorhead. And that song was, I mean, when Ozzy did that, it was just like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
And you could definitely tell, you know, now thinking back on it, you can see some of the influence in there. You really can.
You can totally see it and hear it in the lyrics and such. But until I thought about it and knew, I was like, well, I don't know. So anyway, 1990, he also moved to L.A., where he stayed until his death. He lived, spoiler alert, he lived in a relatively small but very crowded rent-controlled apartment, as Rupert mentioned, just down the street from the Rainbow, which is, like, the rock and roll bar.
Yeah.
It is the rock, like, yeah. He was a bit of a pack rat, with a bend toward pop icons. If you watch the movie, his apartment is more filled and cluttered than my house. And my house
it's crazy.
It's insane.
It's crazy. It's got all that Nazi stuff
in it. Yep. That was the next part I was getting into. He also has a huge collection of Nazi regalia, from helmets to bayonets and such. And he claims to have no belief in the movement, but to have an attraction to look as well, look at it more for the horror of the items and the beauty of the craftsmanship. But he once said something like, if my black girlfriend isn't offended by it, neither should you. Which, I don't know what truth in whether he had a black girlfriend or not, but he said that.
Well, evidently, according to him, he had quite a few girlfriends. Well, all of them, one night at a time.
Coming soon. Coming soon.
Oh, I think it's, like, a little bit ridiculous to act as if, like, there's no... There's something about it where, like, the Nazis, like, were able to involve their symbolism in every single little weird little detail.
Yes.
You know, they're really big on symbols. And that has this certain, like, whoa.
It has an allure.
Yeah, it has this allure to it that doesn't mean you endorse Nazism. It just means, like, whoa, that's a really powerful thing.
Just because you like Frank Lloyd Wright doesn't mean you like 30-degree angles. But he incorporated them in almost everything. So, same kind of thing. Just because you like Nazi gear doesn't mean...
I think, yeah.
What, is that too big a stretch for you?
Well, I think, like... I think
30 degrees too far.
I think just because you like... Mel Gibson movies doesn't mean
you're anti-Semitic.
That you're like into like human sacrifice and violence, you know.
Apocalyptic.
That's about as that's the just, other, that's just 30 degrees the other direction.
Just because you like horror movies doesn't mean you're a serial killer. You know?
Okay. I'll do that one.
I mean, it's a powerful icon. Just because like you're obsessed with the Manson cult. Plenty of people are, myself included, doesn't mean you're into, you know? And yeah. I don't understand why, like, oh, he collects a lot of Nazi stuff means he's a Nazi. No, it doesn't.
No. It means he has a fucking collection.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, 1992, he was a main character in a video game called Motorhead, which, if he wasn't the main character in a video game called Motorhead, I don't know who right. should be. But it was released for the Atari and Amiga systems, 92 Atari release. Weird, right? Because that was Nintendo era.
Very much so.
Yeah. Either way, 1994, he had a cameo in the movie Airheads, which is a Facebook hint, because I couldn't resist. Like, seriously, Steve Buscemi. But in his cameo, because he showed up a couple of times, he shouted truthfully that he edited his school newspaper.
Oh, God.
There's a scene in Airheads where he's in a crowd screaming, I edited my school newspaper! Because they're all talking about how uncool they were. And it's actually Lemmy telling the fucking truth, because he did. Which kind of cracks me up. 1995, the Motorhead lineup became Lemmy, Mikey D, and Phil Campbell. And it remained that way until the end of the band. So we finally, 95, we're, what, 20 years into the band almost? We finally have a solid lineup.
Shit.
In 1996, he narrates Troma Studios' Tromeo and Juliet, which I loved that movie. I didn't know that he fucking narrated it.
Wow.
Right? And Troma Studios, great films. Well, I mean, depending on what you're looking for in a film. I mean, like, it's a certain genre. I think they kind of have their own genre.
The purposeful B-movie.
Yeah. Yeah,
when it gets right down to it, he's got 65 different actor credits within IMDb.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
His IMDb page is pretty big. Yeah.
Yeah. And, again, that's not something you would... I mean, well, there's one here called Lap Dance 01. That kind of makes sense. But
yeah, I mean, and a lot of them are cameos because he had become such... I mean, like, he's a fucking cartoon character by this time.
Yeah.
Everybody knows who Lemmy is and what he looks like and who he is and what he does, which is one of the things. Like, I thought maybe doing research I'd run across some scandalous shit.
Yeah.
But no, he just kind of like, I do speed, I drink Jack and Coke, I gamble, and I scream into a microphone while strumming a Rickenbacker bass.
Yeah.
That's what I do. And so there was nothing hidden. He was very in the open about all of it. 1996
Been
also.
A womanizer. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Been there.
So also in 1996, his Rickenbacker was featured in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and soon after, Rickenbacker released a signature Lemmy Kilmister bass. You can get it for about $600 right now. Jeez. They still make them new. And it is that, what if you are familiar with them, it is that exact bass with all the cutout filigree work in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful, beautiful instrument. How he strummed that with not a flat surface... I'm a little unclear on, but I'm also a shit guitar player, so who knows?
I had no idea you could get a Rickenbacker bass for $600.
You can get a Rickenbacker Lemmy Kilmister version for $609.
That's crazy. I thought Rickenbacker started at a grand.
You would think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he'd been playing Rickenbackers. Remember, his first bass wasn't a Rickenbacker. His second bass was a Rickenbacker, and he died playing Rickenbackers.
Mm. Yeah, he was just kind of an expensive bass. Usually.
It's not cheap.
Well, $600 is pretty... That's pretty inexpensive.
Yeah, that's an affordable instrument.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like, I said, I thought Rickenbacker started at $1,000.
$609, I believe. So as the millennium approached, his health was starting to suffer from long years of living hard,
And in 2000, he was diagnosed with diabetes. But this didn't slow him down too much. 2002, he released his autobiography, White Line Fever. Now, if I've not heard of an appropriately named autobiography... Like,
Finally, they got the name thing down.
Yeah, we got this under control now. No umlauts, either.
Wow.
No double dots or the eyes or anything. 2005, he was featured in the documentary Motorhead, Live Fast and Die Old. Again, they're starting to kill the names.
Yeah.
Where they claimed he had slept with 2,000 women. He later said he only claimed more than 1,000. 1,000 women. Now, Lemmy's no looker. No offense, but he's no looker. 1,000 women.
Well, you know, if you've got roadies, if you got groupies...
Right?
If you're in a popular rock band... Eh.
It's probably not that hard. One in every town. You stay on the road as much as he did.
Yeah, I mean, even that one-armed drummer from Def Leppard probably still gets some. Okay.
Oh, I bet he gets more because he lost an arm. Either way, that kind of floored me. Yeah. It's interesting that they escalated the number almost 1,000 immediately, but whatever. You know, shock value. Yeah. It's no Gene Simmons and his 10,000 women.
I don't know. The number of guys I know... I think I know 1,000 guys who've said they've slept with 1,000 women.
1,000 women.
Yeah, so...
They're maybe the same 1,000 women.
Yeah.
2, somewhere in here, he started suffering from...
She's waited outside of Gene Simmons' room. He did that old, hey, you want a fuck thing? 1 out of 10 says yes.
Well, you're opening for Kiss and Motley Crue. There might be some outcasts, you know? Somewhere in here is when he started suffering some more health issues. He eventually gave up the Jack Daniels for vodka due to the sugar content.
Which, wow, that's...
You know, that's a big move.
Yeah. They did that. The 2 packs a day had to go down to 1 pack a week.
Yeah, and he slowed the amphetamines a little bit.
Yeah, but that was... initially, he quit smoking, and he was offsetting the craving by eating blueberries. But unfortunately, he was eating them by the carton.
Oh, my God. He ended up purple shit every day.
Well, he was trying to retain so much water that it wasn't helping the diabetes. So he had to go back to smoking to actually save himself a little bit of, you know, a couple more years.
Oh, my God. It's a great plan, really. Now, also keep in mind, 2005-ish is where we are. He was born in 1945. He's 60 years old.
Yeah.
And he's getting off the Jack and on to vodka and slowing the amphetamines.
Yeah.
Like that, 60 years old.
Well, there's one here, 2004, and this one actually kind of caught me by surprise. They did a rework of a song called You Better Run. They reworked it to say You Better Swim for SpongeBob SquarePants.
Yeah, might be a virus.
Wow.
SpongeBob SquarePants, 2004, really? Fucked, I didn't know that was on. Anyhow, 2010, the documentary Lemmy was released, as I mentioned. It premiered at South by Southwest in March, and then in Britain in October at some other festival I didn't write down, but South by Southwest is pretty globally known, so I figured I'd throw that in. 2013... He had a cardiac defibrillator implanted and slowed his use even more, but still used. So you've got a fucking defibrillator and you're still using amphetamines. That's fucking rock and roll by definition. You're over 60, you're almost 70 years old now, and you're still doing amphetamines with a fucking shock for your ticker.
Yeah.
Go. It's fucking awesome. So December 11th. 2015. After some struggles on the road and some canceled dates due to Lemmy's health, Motorhead played their last concert in Berlin. Through the years, they released 22 studio albums, 10 live recordings, and other soundtrack work and singles along the way. So that's prolific.
Yeah.
That's a lot of records. Unfortunately, all any of us can sing is Ace of Spades. But
right. Ace of Spades.
Ace of Spades. December 28th, 2015. So we're just, you know, 2 weeks later, roughly. Mm-hmm. He died in his home from, quote, quote, extremely aggressive cancer. I read it was colon cancer. Yeah. According to a release by the band, his cancer had only been diagnosed a couple of days before his death. In his autobiography, he was quoted as saying, "People don't become better when they're dead. You just talk about them as if they are, but it's not true. People are still assholes. They're just dead assholes.
Yep.
I didn't have a really important life, but at least it's been funny." And I thought that was the most poignant quote I heard about him talking about his life. That's very on spot.
When he was diagnosed and the press release hit, originally they were going to do a damage spin on it. And he was like, no, tell them the truth. You know, be honest, be upfront about it. You know, and that's kind of the way he did his entire life.
Well, and the diagnosis was so quick between his diagnosis and his death that they actually did the press release after his death. Mm. So, like, he had a couple days to talk to the band about how we're going to deal with this, and then he's fucking dead.
Yeah.
His son lived with him at the time, all the way through, in his rent-controlled two-bedroom apartment near the Rainbow. Is apparently a musician himself.
It's also said looks, that they swapped a couple of times.
Yes, that is said that they did kind of do the mom-daughter swap a few times. Yeah, which, you know, I guess that's rock and roll. And they laugh about it in the documentary, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought, like I said, that there would be more craziness involved, because when you know about a musician of this ilk and that is this well known for this many years and is clearly a speed freak and a severe alcoholic, you would expect some madness. But again, he just wore everything on his sleeve. He was who he was, from custom made boots to custom built Rickenbackers to his crazy suspension microphone, like all of that. It was just Lemmy. And I can absolutely understand why his big fans refer to him as God, because in their world, he did create a whole music genre or a number of subgenres on his own. He was the only consistent member of Motorhead. I had respect for him, and I have a newfound respect for him for just living out loud and doing it his fucking way, all the way. You go, Lemmy.
Well, honestly, there was a lot of it that, you know, I'm not a huge fan. I honor, but he's one of them where, even though I'm not a huge fan, I respect the hell out of what he did. You know, being able to bridge a gap between different individuals, different subcultures that really would go riotous if they had a chance to. But you put Lemmy in the mix, and then instantly everybody's just eating cookies and drinking milk. And, well, maybe Jack Daniels since smoking cigarettes and doing speed, but, you know, everybody was still happy nonetheless. And that's just, he just kind of did that. You know, you never hear about him throwing temper tantrums and, you know, breaking somebody's face open, or, you know, you don't hear about his, you know, okay, well, he might have a porn tape. He would be the first to tell you, hey, I got a porn tape. You want to see my ugly mole? It's over here.
And the number of, like, fan pics, people that just showed up at the Rainbow.
Yeah.
And he'd just get up from his little gambling machine, take a fan pick.
Mm-hmm. And sit right back down. He was just, everything I could tell, he was just a nice guy that he got along with and loved doing really loud music. And there's power to you for it, buddy. Keep, you know, I hope you're still doing it.
Yeah, so I never really was into Motorhead. I remember when it started hitting the punk scene in New York, and I was like, this is, like, so ridiculous, you know. Because at that time, you know, punk was switching to hardcore, and I thought it was sort of like going back to sort of these old farts who were doing speed metal and then pretending it was hardcore. And I didn't like hardcore in the first place. It's like, you know, I didn't really like, you know, Black Flag or any of that crap. There's something about it that just, like, I don't know. It always seemed to turn into some sort of fighting thing. It seemed like nobody's getting laid to this music. I don't know what the hell it is.
This is not baby making music.
Yeah, it's like,
this is not Shake Your Moneymaker.
Yeah, it's like whenever they had a hardcore show at CB's, it was always like all ages, and all ages meant mostly guys under 18. and so, like, I was like, this is the crowd that listened to this stuff, and I just didn't like the sound of it musically. I liked, you know, I kind of liked it when I heard an individual song. You know, I liked that, but like a whole album's worth, because that's what you had to put on in those days. If you were having a party, nobody was going to put on a song and then a song and a song. You know, so you'd be sitting there to listen to a whole side, and I couldn't take a whole side of this crap. And because it's just like too loud and obnoxious, and like you couldn't hear what the hell anybody was saying. You know, if you listen to other people's lyrics, like, you know, whatever else was going on, like, you know, Elvis Costello or Talking Heads, they had very clever lyrics. This stuff, it just sounded like, blah, 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 you know, and it was just like, you know, I don't know what the fuck this shit is. But, you know, I liked them one song at a time. That was cool. And I loved their look. I was really into the whole horror look. Any horror band, even if I didn't like their music, I loved their look. I could look at them forever, you know. The Misfits, I really dug the Misfits.
I know the Deathlock kind of gets me, but anyhow.
It gets lame, but in its time, that was a really cool thing, you know. And, you know, so I sort of like that. I could kind of get into them, but, like, I never bought any of their albums. But I saw that documentary on Lemmy, and the fact that, like, every single person in it was like, yeah, he was just, like, a really nice guy. Just came in and, like, sat down, smoked his cigarettes and, you
know,
drank
his booze.
Except for
that one guy who ended up in the hospital the next day after hanging out with him.
And, like, everybody was just like, this guy was, like, a really nice guy. And the fact that he was, like, living in a shitty rent-controlled apartment in Hollywood really added something to it for me. You know, he wasn't putting on any airs. So that was kind of cool. And it's very refreshing to see in a rock star that he acted that way. So, you know. He is what he is.